That we, when we're doing meditation, we're not really running the meditation, we're not controlling the meditation. In our lives, there's much we have to do, much we have to control. But when we're meditating, we don't have to do that. We are passengers. I like this idea of being a passenger, because then we're in a passive mode, we're in a receptive mode. And this is a very important quality that we can develop in the mind. When we're doing, we are very active, but we're not aware of what's going on in the mind in our lives so much. So it's very, very useful, this passive quality. And we develop mindfulness usually with a single object, and this is the ability to remember to be present. The Buddha often called mindfulness, he would refer to it as being the ability to remember, but to remember the teachings. And also mindfulness has that quality of being present, the present moment. So mindfulness is remembering to be present. I like the simile of a cricket umpire. A cricket umpire's probably quite good mindfulness. They have to watch the game. They have to follow every moment of it. And that's how mindfulness is. But it has to be relaxed, because if it's too hard, too tense, we'll miss a lot. So we have to have this mindfulness of the umpire, just watching every moment of the game. And then when the mindfulness becomes more and more sustained, more and more continuous, with whatever object we're using, whether it be the breath, metta, this evening it will be the elements meditation, then the mind becomes still, it becomes steady, it becomes powerful, and then the defilements, the negative qualities of the mind, they reduce. And after the mind has spent some time in the state of steadiness, stillness, samadhi, then we can use it for wisdom, for insight. Then it's ready to see more deeply than we usually do.
Most of the time, our ability to stay with various objects, to really penetrate, to really investigate, is limited because our minds are always moving. So that's the process. And for the meditation, there's two very important aspects, is to prepare the body. And I say to people, it doesn't matter whether you sit on the floor, whether you sit cross-legged or whatever. Cross-legged is very nice if you can do, it's very stable. It's possible to fall off a chair, but the cross-legged is quite nice. But it's not mandatory, we don't have to do it. Because meditation is not body work, it's mind work. And this is the most important thing. So the posture should be, the seat should be whatever we're comfortable with, and the ability to have a posture that is alert, fairly upright, but not stiff, not tense, because these work against the meditation. So that's another important quality for the preparing the body, and then to relax the body, very important. And I tend to teach two ways of relaxing the body. I use both. One is the physical way, and this is very important, and then the mental.
With the physical, I usually, this is my latest one actually, quite good. First of all, I use from the foot to the hip, and then I, as it were, twist the hip, and that way stretch the leg a bit, and then the other leg. So you're swiveling the hip, and you're tensing the legs and down to the feet a little bit, but when you just do that, relax, do that, relax, and then do the same with the arms. Just back and forward, and then the shoulders up and down. This is a total workout. It's a good workout. And then the head to side to side, just because this is where we get a lot of our tensions, and you know, it's really this area. Just freeze it up a bit. Few times, and then to tighten the mouth, the eyes, the forehead and the head, hold and then let go, and then the body is relaxed, and then one can mentally go through the body and, as it were, give a massage to the body.
That's very useful too. The physical is good because a lot of the time we don't realize that our posture is not good, my posture is not so good, and we're holding ourselves in particular ways which are not useful. So the physical is good, it relaxes the body, it's a bit like yoga, the principle of yoga, of tensing, relaxing, tensing, hold, relax. And that way the body can really relax. And then the most important, that's preparing the body. Preparing the mind is actually even more important. And for that, for the meditation, it's very good to have an intention for the meditation. Nothing grand, not to develop expectations or demands that the meditation must be this way, I must have first jhana or whatever. Just to have a simple, aim to be here now is good enough. Let things settle, whatever is quite manageable and workable, and then just to keep that in mind, just to let it be, and then continue the meditation. I liken this to, if we never had the intention to go to Kandy, to Mahamura, would we ever get there? Probably not. I mean, you may accidentally. Somebody may take you there and say, oh, this is Kandy. This is important to have a name, but not to turn it into an expectation, because that will lead to frustration, as meditators often find. If they have a lot of expectation, then it can turn to frustration. And the other aspect of preparing the mind, very important, is to develop a positive emotion, positive attitude, positive motivation for the meditation. And I like to teach gratitude is a very good one, katanyata. This is, in experiential terms, it's the feeling of thank you for whatever is good in your life, your relationships, your job, your health, whatever you're thankful for. It's actually a very good way to develop a positive emotion, because there's always something we can be thankful about. And also other ones that I like are contentment. Contentment is very good. I have enough. This is working the opposite direction to what we're used to. And other ones are like giving. Giving is another good way. If you envisage giving a gift to yourself or to others, it brings up a feeling, actually quite a positive feeling, for me anyway. And then, of course, traditional meditation, positive emotions like metta, Maitri, loving kindness, we say, and compassion and joy with others and so on. These are all very useful motivations. And particularly if we're experiencing before a meditation, it's always good to see what state the mind is in. To develop acceptance is good of what we're experiencing now. You know, often we have resistance to negative states of mind, don't like them, they're unpleasant. So we try to push them out, try to get rid of them. In so doing, we usually strengthen them. So it's very good if we have a sense of acceptance. This is here, this is now, it won't be here all the time. Once we accept something, often it moves on. And a similar idea is, of course, making peace with whatever we're experiencing and letting things be. These are nice ways to deal with whatever we're experiencing. Usually, if it's tiredness or we've got irritated during the day, these sorts of things, we can let go of them that way. It helps. And having established this positive state, positive emotion or motivation in the mind, we come into the present moment and let go of the past. Now, this is very important because this is the essence of mindfulness, being here now. That was a famous book in the 60s, Being Here Now. But it's also quite difficult because we're so much of the time we're not here. We're in the future or the past, and our minds are not in the particular location. Our bodies are often somewhere else thinking something else. So, and at that stage too, I like to encourage people to keep that positive emotion going. For instance, if you have used an image or something, just bring up that feeling and combine it with the present moment. The present moment is whatever we're experiencing in our lives. sound sight. That's not sights because her eyes are closed. Feelings in the body, many things can be happening. Heat in the body, whatever. We can experience that in the present moment. And then at those times when the mind wanders off, when we're aware of it, we just come back to the present moment. And this evening's meditation, the objects of that will be things that we experience in the present moment, things we don't pay much attention to, actually. It's quite interesting. And this is the teaching of the four elements. Have you heard of the teaching of the four elements? The Dhatu, Mahadhatu, what we call them in Pali. And this is, of course, earth, water, fire, and wind, or air, you can say. But the whole purpose of these, I like these qualities because of the qualities of life, actually. It's qualities that make our planet, make all the physical, physical things we experience. And it's also very, for human beings, it's like a very strong impact, fire and water. It's very basic, intrinsic to our nature. And so this is, has a strong effect on the mind. But the meditation is not about thinking about concepts of earth, water, fire and air. That would be maybe interesting, but not the point. It's actually experiencing the qualities of those different elements. So for instance, when we experience the earth element, it's a feeling of hardness, solidity. So when we're sitting here, we can feel it. Sitting on the seat, our chair, our feet touching the ground, you can feel the solid quality, the quality of the skeleton in the body, the skull. All of it has got this solid feeling and this hard feeling. It's also somewhat heavy as well. So we can pay attention to solidness, hardness. That's the first thing we can pay attention to. With the water element, we pay attention to wetness. That's the quality we can experience in the body. Where do we experience wetness? Mainly, I find, in the saliva. Once you put your attention on the mouth, the saliva, wetness is very, very obvious. Of course, the wetness relates to the blood, urine, all the other aspects that are wet. And water has that sense of flowing, fluidity, and wetness. So that's the quality we pay attention to during this meditation. And then for the fire element, this is the heat or the cool, the temperature we experience in the body. And this is characterized as having no heaviness to it. Has no heaviness to it, but it's got this warmth or coolness to it. And then the last one, of course, the wind element or the air element, is the air in the body, the winds in the body. I like the idea of the breath being like the wind in the body. But we have air in the stomach, in the bowels, throughout the body, actually, there's air. So when we pay attention to air, we're paying attention to this airy, light feeling movement. Air has a movement, it's quality. This is the experience, not the concept. This is the experience. So those are the four things that we will pay attention to initially. And the Buddha recommends paying attention to them internally, that's inside our bodies, externally, outside our bodies, other people's bodies, the environment, nature, or both. And this evening we'll see how we go. But we'll do internally and externally. The advantage, the purpose of internally is, of course, well, it can be for insight, but it will calm the mind. It will bring and make the mind peaceful. But when we start to contemplate the nature outside this body, externally, that'll bring insight, because we can see things in a different way than we did before. So that's hope to do both of them internally and externally. And when we do it internally to begin with, we just go through, and I'll guide this, the earth element, the sense of hardness, of solidity, and then the wetness, and then the warmth, the temperature in the body, and then the movement of air in the body. Wherever we're aware of it, wherever it's prominent, and just go through them, 1, 2, 3, 4, for a while. And then after a time, we let go of that and just stay with whatever element we're aware of. It may be even more than one, we may oscillate. And then the mind will settle down. Because this is the present moment. Sitting here, what do we experience? We experience many things, actually. But we're experiencing solidity, hardness, wetness, warmth in the body. We're also experiencing the breathing, the wind in the body. So this is the present moment. And this is very important. It's not a concept, it's an experience. So that's good. So, and then, as I say, we let go of going through them, and then the mind settles down, and then we'll do the contemplation of the elements externally, how we relate, how our internal elements relate to external elements. So that's the elements meditation we'll do, and I'll guide that. And then to finish the meditation, just to reflect on the effect of meditation, whether it's had an effect or not, how one feels, and why one feels like that, you know, so just to evaluate it somewhat, and then to share the merits, because it's always good to feel like one's creating positive energy, not only for oneself, but for other beings as well. And of course that's true, because you know, all the people we interact with will, as it were, benefit from our meditation, because we'll be more peaceful, usually more kind, more present, and that's something that other people can benefit from. And then just an aspiration to develop these qualities, not only in the meditation, but in our daily life. So now we can do the meditation rather than talk about it, and so if we can find yourself comfortable, as it were, just to feel the body how it is and to adjust it so it's comfortable. So often we're not aware of how our bodies are, not giving the body that much attention. And so we can tighten the right foot right up to the right hip, and then to move the hip, twist the hip, the right hip, and let go. And then the left leg, right from the foot to the hip, tense it a little, and then swivel it backwards and forwards, just to get it comfortable. And then with the right hand, right up to the shoulder, right up to the neck, we tense that a little bit, tighten it a bit, and then we swivel that backwards and forward just a few times, just to really make the body comfortable, relax. And then we move the attention to the left hand, right up to the shoulder, to the neck. We tighten that a little, and then we can move that, swivel that. And then we can bring the shoulders up towards the ears just a few times and drop it. And then we can move the head to the right, looking over the right shoulder, and then back to the center, to the left shoulder, looking over the left shoulder, and then back again. I'll do that a few times. And now we can tighten the mouth and the eyes, the forehead and the top of the head, just to hold them for a moment. And let go. And now we relax the body from the top of the head. We have this
warm attention, which is like a massage, just moving down the body, relaxing it, letting it be. Just moving down from the top of the head, down past the eyes, down past the mouth, around the neck, down the right shoulder, down the right arm to the hand, and relax the left shoulder like a massage, down the left arm to the hand, and relaxing the back, starting at the shoulders, moving down to the top of the legs, and relaxing the front of the body from the shoulders, moving down the chest, the stomach, the abdomen, and then relaxing the right leg from the hip, the top of the leg, down to the knee, relaxing, down to the ankle, the foot, right to the tips of the toes. And now we move the attention to the left leg, to the top of the left leg, the hip, moving down, relaxing. The knees, the lower leg, the calves, the feet and the toes. Just feeling the whole body relax. Just being present with that. And now we bring to mind an intention for this evening. Just to let things be. For this evening, just let things that have been on our minds, let them be for a while. And this evening we can give ourselves a gift of Maitri for whatever we are feeling in this body and in this mind, be it pleasant or unpleasant, just to have this mind tree for what we're experiencing. May I be free of troubles of body and mind. May I live happily and peacefully. And seeing yourself giving this gift of mind tree to yourself, to this body, to this mind. And imagine that you're giving this gift to everyone here, to the gift of mind tree, the beautiful present of mind tree, wishing them freedom and troubles of body and mind, that they may live happily and peacefully with themselves and others. And we come into the present moment, let go of the past, that's happened, that's over. And we can let go of the future because we don't know what will happen in the future. There's nothing we need to do, nowhere we need to go, just to be here now, experiencing whatever is happening in the present moment, not judging, not liking it, disliking. Just being aware of it, and then the next thing that comes to our attention, maybe it's a sound, maybe it's a feeling in the body, or warmth or coolness, whatever we're aware of now.
and how it can bring to our awareness what's in the present moment anyway. The hardness in the body, the solidness in the body, the experience of those qualities, wherever we experience them in the body, maybe the sitting area, maybe the feet, it can be anywhere, wherever it's from, you can feel this solidness, this hardness. Now we can pay attention to the wetness in the body, that fluidity, flowing quality of water, of liquid, wherever we experience it. Maybe in the saliva, maybe there is some sweat or perspiration, whatever we're aware of. And now in a very relaxed way, we can just go through the elements, one after the other, and then we can just repeat them. So to begin with, we're aware of hardness or solidity. And then we move on to wetness. Wherever we experience it prominently, we don't have to search. And then the warmth in the body or coldness in the body, just notice it. Wherever it is prominent, and then the movement of the air in the body. And then we start again with the solidness, the hardness, quality, wetness, warmth of the body, and the air or the movement of the lines of the wind element. So we just keep going through this, but do it in a very relaxed way. And if you lose that place, you can start again. And the earth element, the hardness, the solidness. And we're experiencing it as it is in the body now. And now we can then go, going through the 4 element silence. We have to just pay attention to whatever element is prominent now, or elements, if there's another one coming and going. Just with a relaxed awareness. The quality of that element, the experience of that element. Body. We can take this wind outside the body. and feel the hardness in the floor, in the walls, in the glass, in the ceiling, in the people that are here this evening. This hardness, solidity. And we can take it outside this building to really go around this building, other people, animals, trees, cars, roads, the earth elements. And we can ask ourselves, is this earth element I experience internally the same or different from the earth element, the solidity and hardness outside this room? Is it my earth element, my solidity, my hardness? Is it me? Can I control it? We bring our attention to the water, the weightless in the body, and we can experience that in this room. Go down water pipes, water in the air, and water in the bodies of all the people around us. And we can take our attention outside of this building to the surrounding areas, to the clouds above, to the streams, ponds, water in pipes, drains, cars, water everywhere, to the ocean. Is my water element, is the water element in this body the same, isn't it? Or different? This water element, this weightless, is it mine? Is it me? And can I control it? Similarly, we I become aware of the fire element, the warmth in the body. And we can become aware of the warmth in this room, in the air, in the floor, walls, windows, doors, and the people here, the warmth in their bodies. And we can move the attention outside this building to all the warmth that's around it, the warmth of the roads, the cars, the people, and during the day, the sun. And we can ask ourselves, is this heat element, this fire element in this body different from the heat element, the warmth outside this body? Other people's bodies, the building, everywhere. Is it different or the same? And we can ask, is this warmth that I feel internally really mine? Is it really me? And do I have control over it? And lastly, we give attention to the air element in the body. This feeling of working, lightness, airiness. And we move the attention outside the body to the room, to the air in this room, to the air in people's
is this air in my body, in this body, different from the air outside this body, or is it the same? And we can ask, is this my air element? Is this air element me? And lastly, can I control this air element?
I hope you could feel the difference from before, and then I didn't. It's quite amazing. Sometimes the meditation, there seems to be so much thinking going on and whatnot. I come out of the meditation and the mind feels really fresh. I think, oh, goodness, that didn't, when I was meditating, it didn't feel like that. But it's amazing, it has an effect. And I really encourage people to, any time of the day, you know, take a little break, 5 minutes even, and it can change the direction of the mind, what we're experiencing in the present moment. Because sometimes we just get a momentum going in the mind of a mental state. Maybe it's a very happy one, maybe it's a very unhappy one. But if we can just take a 5 minute break, it can change that. It can allow that to settle, and then it can start again. You know. Maybe it will still be there, but in a reduced sort of fashion. So. It's very, very useful any time, and particularly times of stress, I think, you know, when you're at work or wherever, you know, one can always go to the toilet and just have 5 minutes of peace and then come out. And that 5 minutes can make a big difference, make a big difference. So
Sometimes we think we can, you know, work things out, think them out, but actually it just usually fuels whatever mental state we're experiencing. And it's just ideas. But when we calm mind with a bit of peace, it's just like changing gears. We go into neutral for a little while and then we're ready to head off, hopefully with a fresher state of mind. So this evening, theme for the talk, which I'm going to be short on, I think, is, and I like this, I don't know if you heard the theme that I had, it's a saying that I like very much: whatever we think it is, the reality is always something different. So that is, whatever we think it is, the reality is always something different. Well, I'm saying, I like actually. It's like a puzzle for me. It's like quite interesting. What does it mean? Does anybody know who said this? It's a pretty easy. There's a saying by the Buddha. The Buddha said this actually. The thing about this is that what do you think it means? Do you have an idea of what this means? In actual fact, it can mean many, many things. No, what the Buddha had in mind. But actually, because it's like a riddle, because it's like a question, we can just use it in our lives whenever we want to explore things. You know? And very important, it can be a bit like a... it sort of teases the mind. It gives the mind something to stimulate it. And in the Japanese tradition, of course, they have koans. You've heard of these koans? Yes. These sort of puzzling riddles, as they were, you know, like the sound of one hand clapping and what was your original face, all these sorts of things. And it's quite interesting, in Theravada Buddhism they say there are no koans, but I think this is getting close to one, actually. And so it's quite useful because it really gets our minds, activates the mind. And the purpose of this is to develop wisdom, not just for an entertainment. It's not like a rubric cube, you know, those cubes that you have to, you know, get all the colours the same, so it's just real torture. But it's something that really challenges the mind, engages the mind. And this is actually something that's very useful for developing wisdom. And we can look at this in many, many ways. Bhikkhu Bodhi, he called it a philosophical riddle. And see, this is what is a riddle? It's something that challenges us to solve it. But we can, so it's like a good point of departure for investigation, because it's asking us, what does it mean? What does it mean? What does it mean? And that's the purpose that the Buddha had in mind. So a very good story that illustrates this is from Ajahn Brahm. This is a different version of that story. Do you know the story, Good, Bad, Who Knows? Good, Bad, I think you know. It comes from the one that Ajahn Brahm usually tells, comes from the Jataka story, so it's very, very nice one, actually. But I'll tell one, I think he may have told me, actually, from the Chinese tradition. And it concerns this farmer who's living in a very remote part in China, had a family, a son, and, you know, not very wealthy farmer at that. And he had a horse and he had some land that he could grow his crops on and so on. And one day his horse, which was a mainstay for transport, maybe even for farming, you know, for ploughing or whatever, disappeared. And all the villagers said to him, "Oh, this is terrible. How are you going to, you know, manage? Because your horse has disappeared." And this farmer, a very wise farmer, he said, "Good, bad, who knows?" And so the villagers thought, "Wow, he's crazy. He's crazy." And then, after a time, the horse returned. The horse came back to the farmer's home. But it came back with a whole group of wild horses,
So now, not only did he have the one horse, he had these other horses, two, five, six horses.
And so the villagers said to him,
this is wonderful, what good fortune. Kuan Yin is smiling at you, or whatever. And he said, good, bad, who knows?
And they thought,
he's crazy for sure. And then,
so the horses, he had these horses, so it's a source of wealth, and he could
use them for his farming and so on, and even sell them.
But, so first of all, they were wild horses, so they had to be tamed. They had to be tamed.
In English, they use this horrible word,
breaking them in. It sounds terrible to me.
And the son was taming these horses, you know, riding and putting saddles on them and so on.
And one of the horses threw him off. Off his back,
and he fell on the ground, and he broke the leg in a few places.
And after that, he couldn't walk properly. He had a terrible limp,
and it was difficult for him, painful for quite some time. And the villagers said, "That's terrible. That's awful. This is bad fortune that's happened to you. Had good luck, and now you've got bad luck." And of course, what did the farmer say? Good, bad, who knows? And they probably really got infuriated with him. Simpleton. And so there he is with his son who's immobilized, can't walk properly, got a bad limb, become lame, which they're only young.
And then, sometime later,
there's a war broke out, and the king was conscripting soldiers into the army.
So every young man that was available drafted into the army.
And they came to the village to take all the young men, which they did. But the farmer's son, they didn't take because he couldn't walk properly, so he wouldn't be a good soldier. And so the villagers said, "Oh, you're so lucky, you're so lucky."
And the farmer said to them,
"Good, bad, who knows?" And it shows you that we can't tell how things will turn out.
And I call this the wisdom of uncertainty. That's really what this talk is about.
Wisdom of uncertainty. Usually, isn't it, we feel, if we're uncertain, we feel insecure. But actually, it's wisdom to know that things won't be the way we necessarily think they will turn out.
So often in life, there are difficult,
very difficult times for us. Maybe illness, death in the family, we lose our job, whatever it is. But sometimes, even though that's terrible at that time, it can turn into something that is actually very useful and very positive.
We can really grow from it. Because in actual fact, the nature of human beings, it's, I think, very true,
is we're not really activated, we're not really energized until we have to be. And so difficult times, we say dukkha in Buddhism, can be a real motivator
in our lives.
Even though at the time, very unpleasant. Who would wish this on anyone? And so it is actually, one of my teachers said that this dukkha, this suffering we experience in life,
is our best teacher.
Most teachers, if we say we're having a hard time, they say, go home, rest, take it easy. But she said, this is Ayakem, a famous Buddhist nun, she said, dukkha's not like that. It just stays with you. It won't let you go until you make the move, until you change your attitude to what you're experiencing. Because dukkha is actually teaching us. And this is where she said, dukkha is our best teacher, because it will stay with us. We have to find a solution or suffer more,
get more angry, more bitter, more resentful about what's happened to us,
get more fearful about our health or the state of the world, whatever it is. So dukkha is a real motivator for us.
Most of us, as I say, we generally quite lazy about things until we have to do it. Then we have to find some solution to it. And the important thing about this approach, this wisdom of uncertainty, is that it avoids the extremes that we live our lives according to. You know,
we get very elated, we get very happy when things are going well, don't we?
We want to celebrate, we want to party when things are going well. But then when things aren't going well, when there are difficult times in our lives,
then we get depressed. And we get miserable with it. We
think, oh, it's going to be like this
all the time. You know? And of course it isn't.
So this is the wisdom of uncertainty,
is that things change. So that happiness, when we're experiencing that happiness, if we think, well, it will change, we can enjoy it while it's there, but it's not permanent. And the same with the misery, the difficulties, the sufferings in our life.
It's there for a time, but it's not permanent.
And the place that this wisdom of uncertainty takes us to is in the middle, where we can be less pulled by the elation, less pulled by the depression and the misery. Because when we have that wisdom that things, that's the nature of things, they will go up and then they go down, they'll go up and down. There'll be happy times, there'll be unhappy times. And with that wisdom, we undermine that expectation that things are always going to be good, permanent, get better and better. And so on. They won't. They will change. There will be good times, for sure, and then there will be difficult times. So this is, in actual fact, very much the middle path that the Buddha was talking about. Imagine a patipada, you know, not going to the extreme of indulging
in sensual pleasures he was talking about. This is the happiness that we can enjoy in the world. But also at the same time, not torturing ourselves, not giving ourselves a lot of suffering and dukkha. Being in the middle, which is a place of wisdom, and also a lot of happiness, because we're no longer pulled by happiness and unhappiness. These pull us around in life. They don't give us any freedom. And of course, some of you will know of Ajahn Chah, the Thai teacher, and he had a very famous teaching, which was, he'd say, everything is not sure. Not sure. And that includes the body and the mind, the future, every aspect of our lives. And when he says that it's not sure, this is the Buddhist concept of anicca. Anicca, it's the fact that things are not permanent, they don't last. And his interpretation comes from, I think it comes from the Pali. Because the word anicca in the Pali Vinaya anyway, means something that's irregular. So there used to be regular meals were nicha bata. They were like invitations once a week, once a month, once a year, whatever.
And irregular ones were anicca bata. So they were ones that there wasn't a particular time for them. They weren't certain when they would happen, those meals. So this sense of things not being sure.
And he says, it's a really, he gives inspiring talks about it, he gave, you know, that I've read,
that this is really the wisdom of the noble ones, the enlightened ones, is that things aren't sure. And when we do have that wisdom, as I say, we're more in the centre, we're more in a place of freedom from being pulled around by elation and depression. And we have, in fact, more happiness to be there, in a sense of freedom from those extremes. And of course, that's very useful in our lives. It's whatever we experience, whatever we think, whatever we perceive, we can just think of it. It's not sure. And then we can be less caught up or less involved with it. And this can give our lives a lot more smoothness and a lot more happiness with that. And there's a nice story that I like to use from Nasruddin. He was a Sufi teacher. They say in Turkey, in I think about the 12th century, and Nasruddin had a donkey, and he was into transport. The donkey was the transport, and he would take things from A to B, and he had various goods that he would take from one place to the next place, and so on. And one day the donkey had these big bags of salt. And the donkey was absolutely weighed down, you know, exhausted by this weight. Then they went into a stream, and the salt dissolved in the stream. So the donkey came out of the stream,
and it was like
so light. It was so frisky almost, you know, so much energy, so much relief. And so forth.
wow, this is good.
And of course, Nazarud, very disappointed because he just lost the cargo, what he was taking to the market or wherever he was going. And so another time, perhaps the next day, he had a big load of wool on the donkey, again, very heavy, and the donkey
was straining with this,
and then they came to the stream, and the donkey thought,
ah, great, great,
I'll soon be free. Goes into the stream. The wool fills up with the water, and he struggles to get out of the stream.
And then Nazarudin said, you thought you'd get away with it every time, didn't you?
And this is like us, aren't we? We're like that. You know, we have this experience of relief, of happiness, and everything's got to always be like that. And then something comes up, and we think, oh, it's going to be like, it isn't. And so it's as the Buddha was talking about, whatever we think it is, the reality is always something different.
So that's, and another aspect of it is that the
Buddha once said that whatever
the noble one sees true,
isn't enlightened being sees true, the worldly people see as false. And whatever worldly people see as false, the enlightened people see as true, and enlightened beings see as true. And this is very much what he's expressing in that saying. And what he's talking about, of course, we're talking about it, is happiness, unhappiness. What we perceive, what worldly people perceive, and enlightened people perceive as happiness. But enlightened beings see it as unhappiness, and vice versa. What we see as being permanent,
which is pretty much what we often are,
enlightened beings will see it as impermanent. And what
the most important one is
what we see as ourselves, as being me, mine, and belonging to me, myself. They see it as not so. And another aspect is what we see as being beautiful, attractive, desirable, they don't see as beautiful, attractive, and desirable. And this is a totally different vision from what we are experiencing, what unenlightened people are experiencing. So this is what the Buddha is pointing to when he says, whatever we think it is, in reality, it's always something different.
And so now I think just to finish off with another story, it's a difficult one to choose.
So maybe we have Andre's story. Andre's great fun, I think. And of course, most people here will know of Andre. I think you probably grew up with him, and maybe a dumb person. You were in plays, Andre plays, and so on.
So this story of Andre was one day he was going through the paddy fields, the Kumbaroo, and he saw this group of farmers and govind, and they were all gathered around this huge rock, and they were talking, going on about this rock. And he came up to them and said, well, what are you talking about? And he said, we're just planning where we could move this rock. If we could move this rock over to this other place, we'd have much larger kumbaroo, you know, it'd be really, really worthwhile, very, very useful, very profitable. And but we just try and decide where we'd put it. And Andre said to him, oh, well, I can help you. I can move it to wherever you'd like to put it. And so they thought, oh, fantastic. That was really good. He said, and they asked him, they said, Andre, what would you expect in payment for this? And he said, fine food for the next 3 months to build up my strength for moving this rock. And they thought, wow, that's a very good deal. And so they gave him the best rice. And in the story, they say chicken and all these things. I think Andre told them what would be good. And so they gave him this food, and for 3 months he lived like a king. Then the day came, of course, that he was going to move the rock.
And so he put a coconut leaf on the shoulder, ready for lifting the rock. Came to the rock, and of course all the farmers and govind were standing around ready. And so he he looks at the farmers and they look at him with all this expectation building. Oh, what's going to happen? And he said, gentlemen, first of all, please lift, and then I will move the rock. So they had got completely wrong. They were thinking of just moving the rock, but they hadn't thought of the first thing, which Andre had. How to lift it, how to lift it. So and they realized, Andre is playing another joke on us. So this is a good example of whatever you think it is, it will always be in reality, it will always be something else. So I hope this is useful for your life, particularly the wisdom of uncertainty that sees that things change, either happiness, unhappiness, they change. And to have that wisdom that can remain in the center, they can enjoy the good times, not get too caught up with it, not expect them to last forever, and at the same time, not to get caught up in the depression, the negativity, of difficult times, and to realize this too will change. Yes. And of course, that's a famous story too. I think everybody knows, this too will pass. This is very much the wisdom of uncertainty. This too will pass. So it's very good. We don't mind if unhappy times pass.
The difficult part is when we're having a good time, things are going very well,
then to say, this too will pass, and
oh, come on. That spoils it. But it is the wisdom that frees us from the extremes, those extremes, gives us some freedom. So I'd like to finish the talk there on the wisdom of uncertainty and just ask if there are some questions for on any aspect, anything that you have in mind, either the talk, the meditation, whatever. Wonderful. That's good. Had you ever done the elements meditation before? It's a very good one because what it does is it connects us with the present moment, obviously, but it also connects us with the real nature of the body. It doesn't really belong to us. You know? We have to care for it, for sure. Have to care for it.
It's a vehicle for our mind, for our experience, for our development. But it doesn't belong to us. That's something that most of us would find pretty challenging. Right? Challenging, yes. So, but it's very useful from that point of view. I find it very good. And it can reduce some of the negative states of mind, like being overly concerned with our bodies, being overly concerned with a lot of lust or passion for other people's bodies.
Because when you realize just they are elements, the same as my body is elements,
then what's the big deal?
We make a big deal out of it.
We didn't make a big deal out of it. So the meditation is very useful from that point of view. It gives us a lot of insight and freedom too, because when you own this body, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
And as you get older, it can be very challenging because the body's not working so well,
and we can all see where it's heading.
We don't like that.
And so it's a very good meditation in that way because it grounds us in reality. The difficulties we have in life are basically because we're not in sync, we're not in agreement with reality as it is. We want it to be some other way than it is, and then we suffer. But when we're in accord with, when we're in harmony with how things are,
we don't suffer. In fact, there can be a lot of happiness in that, actually. A lot of happiness from freedom.
Freedom we experience.
How do we know? As things keep on changing all the time.
Yes, yes, I know.
The reality is not what we thought it is.
Yes.
The only way to sort of accept it and continue is to keep your mind right on the spot, right? In other words, be very much in the present. Because the moment you put it beyond yourself to the future, again there is uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
You look back, there is maybe lamentation and sorrow.
Mm, exactly.
So the point is to keep it all the time on the spot. Is that any way to...
That's very true, yes, yes. If we stay in the present, if we stay, if we are mindful as much as possible continuously, if possible, then there's very little room for negative states of mind to arise. And then we're witnessing, we're experiencing the present moment. We're actually living very fully too, because we're actually here and now with whatever is happening. So that is very true. That is a way of dealing with the uncertainty of life, uncertainty of life. But of course, the most important aspect too is to have the view or the wisdom that things are uncertain, impermanent, don't last. Because if we have that wisdom as well, that helps us to accept what we prefer not to accept. So, and then to actually see that things arise because of conditions and causes, and then pass away because of conditions and causes. So yes, no, that's very good, yes. And I think the more mindfulness we can have, being present, the more happiness there is for the mind. The mind suffers much, much less, because most of our suffering comes from the past and the future. Regretting what we've done, fearing what may come. We do get excited about what may come. It may be a lot of the time we live in expectation, anticipation, I think they say, of what something pleasant in the future. But being in the present, yes, that is the best place to be, to live fully. Mm. So thank you for that question. One of the good aspects of an evening like this evening is we get to meditate together, practice together. And as I've said before, it's quite different from practicing on your own. And for most people, I find it quite beneficial. You know, I find that they can actually go deeper, get more peaceful, develop more understanding by meditating in a group. It has energy and support that's useful, very useful. So I think now we can finish the evening, maybe just to share the merit with others, and then after this, to if anybody's got questions, I'd welcome to come up. And again, I'd like to thank the organisers for this evening, for arranging this, making it possible, and for all of you for coming and contributing your energy with your time. It's marvellous to see people interested in important things in life. These are important matters, actually. And they're matters that deal with our happiness and ways of dealing with unhappiness as well. So, good. So, just a short sharing of merit. Idam me nyati nam ho tu sugita om tu nyatayo. Idam me nyati nam ho tu sugita om tu nyatayo. Idam me nyati nam ho tu sugita om tu nyatayo. Etavata cha amhehi sambhatam punya sampadam. Sambe deva namodantu sambha sambhati siddhya Ethavata cha amhehi sambhatam punya sampada Sambe bhuta namodantu sambha sambhati siddhya Ethavata cha amhehi sambhatam punya sampada Sambe sattha namodantu sambha sambhati siddhya Akashatta cha bhummatta deva naga mahidika Punyam tam namoditva chiram rakantu sasana Akashatta cha bhummatta deva naga mahidika Punyam tam anumoditva chiram rakam tu desanam Akasata chumata deva naga mahindika Punyam tam anumoditva chiram rakam tu mampa